In this Hoosier History Live broadcast from June 7, 2008, the removal of the town of Elkinsville in rural Brown County, Indiana, is described by the CEO of Lucas Oil, Forrest Lucas, and his three younger sisters, Carol, Connie, and Brenda. In the 1950s, the Lucases were in grade school in Elkinsville, and in the early 1960s, all of the residents of Elkinsville were forced to move by the Army Corps of Engineers to make way for the construction of Monroe Reservoir, primarily as a water supply for Bloomington, Indiana, but also to create recreational opportunities. We join Hoosier History Live as Nelson asks Forrest Lucas via telephone about his Elkinsville memories, while sisters Carol and Brenda join the conversation in studio.
Your memories of growing up there, because we're having these torrential rains today in Indiana, I'm told one of the reasons for creating Lake Monroe Reservoir was that the Elkinsville area, that whole area, flooded out an awful lot. Do you remember an awful lot of that happening when you were a kid there?
Yeah, when it rained a lot, Salt Creek went right through the edge of this little place, and we would always, the creeks would always be out of the bank this time of year.
What are some of your fondest memories of Elkinsville as a town? I'm told it was a lot of farmhouses, and I guess your family had lived in that area for several generations. Your grandfather was a preacher at the one and only church in town. Is that right?
Yeah, it wasn't much of a town. There was a lot of little places like that when transportation was a big problem.
And a lot of the residents worked in Columbus, is that right? They came in by van?
Yeah, carpooling was the thing there. It wasn't most places. Everybody kind of worked the same job, and everybody would carpool. Even if they worked at a different factory, you get dropped off. Pretty much everybody got carpooled because driving was just a big deal. Most people either had an old jalopy car or no car at all.
Uh-huh.
So walking a mile or two or three was no big deal.
Uh-huh. Well, how'd you feel as I assume you were a kid when you had to move? Most children don't like to move. How'd you feel?
We had already left. We had a lot of family still there, but we had already moved out as far as the town going away.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was about 15, 16, something like that. The girls might know. Mm-hmm. No better. At that time in my life, it wasn't.
I remember the last time we left Brown County. I was in the fourth grade.
Yeah, I was in the sixth grade.
So you would have been, yeah. Carol, you would have been like 10 or 9 or
9.
10.
Yeah, I remember it was during, it was at the end of the semester for us, and we moved to Columbus and stayed there with Bernice and them.
Okay, then you would have been and went into the fifth grade. And,
yeah, I would. When we went.
We entered sixth grade in Clear Spring, I think.
Well, I
yeah,
went,
join in, Brenda, too.
I was in the first grade at Clear Spring, and mm-hmm. I remember living at Grandma and Grandpa's house there. So mm-hmm. when we left, but it was...
How do you sisters, do you remember the flooding there, too? And even as we talk, there's lightning happening here. I can see it outside our studio window in thunder, so this is so appropriate. Do you guys remember a lot of flooding as kids there in Elkinsville?
I was... there was creeks everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I was entranced by the amount of creeks. And I was always going and playing in there because it was isolated. It was a very isolated area, but there was a lot of extreme closeness. And I think that's where most...
Yeah, a lot of extended family in
very
the community.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you mentioned that, Brenda, about being isolated. We should tell listeners where in Brown County Elkinsville was located. It was south of Nashville and, as I understand it, west of Story, Indiana, the historic... Mm-hmm. A good friend of mine actually owns a bed and breakfast town now of Story, Indiana, Rick Hofstetter. I want to have him on the show down the line. But you were kind of out... Elkinsville was out sort of by itself.
It's there. 5 miles after you get to Story. It's mm-hmm. 5 miles on from there.
Forrest, I don't want to keep you on the line forever. I just wanted to ask, your memories of growing up there, are they fond ones, or how can you describe for us what it was like as a kid living in that town?
Probably not quite as bucolic as a lot of people.
Sort of, would you say hard scrabble?
It was hard times. It was hard scrabble, you know. Mm-hmm. It was very hard scrabble. It was,
What did your parents...
We had a one-room school, which was okay. You know, a couple of kids in the class and five kids. I think Carol's class was the big one. It was five or seven.
Yeah, you guys, Carol and Forrest, you guys went to a one-room school?
Yeah, one teacher for seven classes, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And I think, Carol, didn't you indicate in a note that you gave to my producer, Molly Head, there was a potbelly stove in that school?
Yeah. There was no electricity when we started. It's kerosene lamps hanging from the ceiling.
And this would have been like the 50s or something? There was no electricity in the
1950s? Early
50s. Well, there was no electricity that went to that part of Brown County until 1947, I think.
Wow.
I think I was eight, Carol, when it came in.
Yeah, probably so, because that was about what I remember. And then it was a single bulb hanging from the ceiling. It was not whole house electricity.
Yeah, just because you got electricity doesn't mean you had appliances. Appliances kind of came in like, I think probably most people first bought a radio, and then over a period of years, you would eventually buy one of these and one of that. So
electric,
it was just
like you kept your wood stove, you kept your... what they called a sad iron to iron with. There was no electricity.
Water bucket.
yeah. Forrest, do you
water
remember?
Water bucket and a dipper everybody drank out of.
Yeah, except Mom always
out
said.
Out of houses, all the, be quite truthful with you, my memory is, we were living pretty much like people would have lived at the turn of the century.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, Brenda has a question for you.
Forrest, Dad told me when our grandmother was a clerk at the story, at the grocery,
really?
At that store there.
Mm-hmm.
He told me about, they didn't have electricity, but they had batteries that were buried. Do you remember anything about that? These batteries that were used for electricity were actually in ground. Then
I never heard of that, but the batteries were used for radios. I think Grandpa Lucas had a battery radio, but he would only play it like, I think, try to get the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday night, and that was the only time it was played.
Well, and then the seed reports probably.
Didn't want to waste the battery, and you had a big old aerial, kind of like a clothesline, that ran from the house out to a tree somewhere in your antenna.
Right.
Well, I'm told that when the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers flooded, I guess the construction began in November of 1960, and I know you guys had moved by that point, but apparently what had been there that was flooded or raised was a church, the church, I guess, where your grandfather preached, a one-room schoolhouse, a blacksmith shop, a general store, and a mechanic's garage.
See, that's the land is still there.
Uh-huh.
The mechanic shop is still there. They took down all the houses, everything, and took it out. And actually, the water isn't even over the town. They didn't have to take it out.
No.
Really?
No.
But they made part of the Corps of Engineer land, I guess, but they just turned around and sold a lot of it back. So there was really no reason to take out the town.
Well,
no.
That leads me to one thing I was wondering about. Was there a lot of, and I know you moved before some of the people that had to move because of the flooding, but was there a lot of bitterness or objections?
Oh, yeah. Everybody kind of felt like the government came in and said, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And there was no coordinated resistance. Everybody felt like that you couldn't resist, so they just kind of took it and left.
Did people get a fair price for their homes? Do you guys recall?
I don't think anybody felt like they got a fair price.
No, they didn't. It was pretty awful. And then the other side of our family, the Deckard family, over in Monroe. Got the same deal, and so they're selling that land as well.
So that when the people that were moved out because of the flooding and the creation of Lake Monroe, and again, the reasons were, A, to control flooding, B, Bloomington area needed more water, a better water supply, and also, you know, to create the resort. We've got boaters and hikers and swimmers and all that enjoy Lake Monroe. So for all these reasons, that was done. But the people that were moved out for that... Did they tend to move in clusters? I gather most people did move to the Columbus area. Is that right?
Yeah, probably most. There wasn't like a lot of people. You got to bear in mind, this is a very small little place.
Mm-hmm.
So most of them probably didn't move to Columbus.
Some went to Bloomington.
Kind of like, because it was wherever. You know, I wasn't that close to everybody at that point in time. I just remember when we was a kid living there, you know, I remember my grandpa Lucas one time. I went with him, I think, to Bedford, I think it was, and he found some Amish people, and I'd never seen Amish before, and he was pointing them out to me and explaining to me and all about it. You know, he thought they was kind of odd, and I looked at him and listened to him, but the only difference I could tell between us and them at the time was that they were dressed better than we were.
That's
well,
great.
But, you know, Aunt Myrtle, which was she, when she and her husband, Lou, I asked her that very question. I said, because I was thinking of it more of a sweet, you know, kind of thing. And I said, didn't you feel badly about leaving Brown County? Mm-hmm. And she said, honey, I was so glad to get out of there.
Really? Because it was such a hard life.
It was a very, very hard life. And you either were resourceful or that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's odd to have experienced it in that point.
Yeah, well, the way you described
a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It was harsh, but there was a lot of caring and loving at the same time.
Uh-huh.
At the same time, because you had family.
I did want to make one comment and force to hear what you think about this. But I think one of the things that are often and commonly said about the Four of Us kids is how well we all have come out of the situation. And,
well, I should say, yes.
But I think when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, if you remember, there were virtually no toys, no organized this or that or the other, except for church and the school. But we were very creative in figuring out games to play and things to do with our time. And I don't ever remember being bored. There was work to do.
There was always work or something to do. But, you know, really, our imaginations were probably my biggest toy. You could always find something. You know, I made playing shots, bow and arrows. You girls played hopscotch all the time.
You mean there was a level place in Elvinsville to play hopscotch?
It sounds very appealing.
But the other thing is,
there's always we had a lot of livestock to take care of, so it was always something. I remember when I was seven, I had to get up and go milk the cow and bring the milk back, take care of the cow, and Carol, you fix breakfast and wash the dishes because mom and dad both worked for a little while.
I did that, so I was 5 or 6 years old.
Uh-huh.
You were in first grade. I think I was in second grade. That's where it was.
Well, listen, Forrest, thank you so much for calling in. I want to be respectful of your time, and congratulations to all the Lucas siblings on your success. You've all achieved it, clearly. So, again, I appreciate your calling, Forrest. And now I want to take a call from our Road Tripper correspondent. Our Road Tripper is Chris Gall of the Indianapolis Convention and Visitors Association. He calls in every week with a Hoosier Heritage Report, and appropriately enough for this show and for this day, he's calling in, I think, from near another body of water. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks, Nelson. Good afternoon. And you're right. I'm about a half a mile from Lucas Oil Stadium at another body of water. It's a body of water that you frequent daily, I think.
Yes.
Maybe 6 days a week, the Natatorium.
That's exactly right. I can't claim I'm a lap swimmer. I've been a former lifeguard. That's what I do. I don't run or anything like that. But I am addicted to our Natatorium. I consider it a gem of life here in Indianapolis. So go ahead, Chris. You've got a report related to it.
Yeah, I'm calling right inside the Natatorium. And, you know, this building was built in 1982, and it's hosted countless national events and athletes, including Greg Louganis and Michael Phelps.
Mm-hmm.
It seats 4,700, making it the world's largest, U.S.'s largest indoor pool.
Mm-hmm.
There have been 90 American records and 12 world records set in this pool. But in the world of diving, the final step before making it to Beijing in the Olympics is the U.S. Olympic team diving trials. Now, Nelson and listeners, this is coming up June 18th through the 22nd here at the Natatorium. This is a chance to see world-class athletes vying to head to China and dive for gold. So if you're into diving, you want to come out and check out the U.S. Olympic team diving trials. Tickets are $75 to get into all sessions, or single day for $5. There'll be a fan area where you can meet some of the Olympic athletes, both current and former. And, you know, have you ever witnessed a mentor?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I've covered them. I covered Greg Louganis during all his triumphs. He was the big star of our Pan Am Games in 1987, and I wrote about him for the Indianapolis paper. But then just when I swim there recreationally, you can see the divers training. Often they're on even land. They train on a trampoline right by the side of the pool.
It's a real hidden secret. Our natural tournament in Indianapolis is the National Training Center for USA Diving, which has its national headquarters here in Indianapolis. So Olympic hopefuls from all over the country train here and use that natatorium while you're swimming laps.
Yes, and I want to point out that among the Olympic, there are more than hopefuls, are a couple local divers. One of them is Thomas Fincham, who is a student at Lutheran High School. He's considered almost a shoo-in for a medalist in the Beijing Olympics coming up this summer. And well, hey, thanks so much for calling in, Chris. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, live from the natatorium. I'll send it back to you and have
all
a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye.
All right, now I want to throw out our Hoosier History trivia question that we toss out to listeners every week. A listener who calls in today with the correct answer will receive two tickets to the Indy Jazz Fest, courtesy of the ICVA. The Jazz Fest is next weekend. Here's the trivia question. During the Civil War, a greater percentage of young men and teenagers of military age from Indiana fought in Mr. Lincoln's Army or the Union Army than any other state except one. Here's the question. What's the only state that had a greater percentage of young men in the Union Army than Indiana? Hint, it's a small state. Well, coming up, we'll take listener phone calls and talk more about the town underwater, the Elkinsville story with the Lucas Oil siblings. Got Carol and Brenda in studio with me. We just had Forrest on the line, and their sister Connie is expected to call in. Remember, we'd love to have you call in, too, with your questions or insights. The number to call, either for the trivia question or to ask us questions, is 788-3314.
Hoosier History Live, underwritten by Barnes & Thornburg, LLP, with more than 450 legal professionals representing the interests of businesses, entrepreneurs, nonprofits, and individuals. Online at btlaw.com.
All right, we're back, and if you're just joining us, this is Hoosier History Live, and I'm your host, Nelson Price. We're exploring the town underwater, the story of Elkinsville, Indiana, with my guests in studio, sisters Carol and Brenda Lucas. And on the phone, we now are being joined by another sister from Arizona, where I'm sure it's dry and the palm trees are swaying and everything. And this is Connie Lucas Schooler. Welcome to the show, Connie.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in. And we've been chatting already about, because of all the torrential rain here today, about the your sisters were recalling memories of the floods that happened in Elkinsville, and your brother called in and shared some memories there, too. Do you guys and Connie and Brenda, Carol and Brenda, feel free to join in this, too. Is it a little wistful to think of this town that you grew up in that no longer exists? And I'm wondering, particularly for the ones that live in Indiana, whether you, when you look at Lake Monroe, for example, can you enjoy it? Or is there just a little bit of, oh, you know what, this washed away kind of our town?
Well, I certainly enjoy the memories of Elkinsville more than I enjoy Lake Monroe.
Yes.
But I don't live there, and I don't have a boat, so maybe I'm different. But I think most of the people that lived in Elkinsville are like me, and mm-hmm. they miss that security.
Uh-huh.
There was security living in that small community, and with a lot of houses on the hills. And I know that it was probably because of the floods. But most of them did have their homes built on nice little hills.
And were these houses, would you describe them as like farmhouses or?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
They
absolutely.
Were larger, though. Joanne, the way that I remember it, they always were fairly large because there was a lot of kids. I mean, that's the way that I remember. I mean, I remember the Deckard house. The way that our Uncle Elsie, would describe it to me, it was a very well-made home,
well
constructed.
The Deckards were a wealthier family.
Yes, and they had access to more. But the way that if I could
that was
respond,
our grandmother's family.
If I could respond to that question too, I don't. Her name's Joanne. She goes by her alias Connie.
Okay. all these family secrets are coming
out. Yes, they are.
They call me Joe all my life, and my first grade teacher would call me anything but my first name, Connie. So that's how the confusion.
All right. Well, you have a point, Brenda, that you want to make.
Yeah. The thing about it is that I'd like to interject some reality with some emotion and some facts.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the Waltons, okay? It was not this, hardworking, because I remember the bare light bulb in the ceiling of the house, you know?
Uh-huh.
What?
I remember the house with no light bulbs. We lived in a house that didn't have electricity.
Right.
In the Philippi place.
Yeah, we were talking about how electricity came very late to the area.
One of my jobs was to clean the globes, the coal oil lamps.
This was in the 50s, the late 50s. Mm-hmm. But the other part about that is, though, is the reality of it is that there was actually a horse-drawn carriage that took the roads. Now, and I remember whenever a car of any kind would come down those gravel roads, you stopped what you were doing and went to go see this event because it was so isolated, and you stood there and you waved to everybody. But at that same time, in reality, we had each other. And there wasn't anything of going and playing with these friends or whatever. It demanded that you be everything that you could be as a child and or as an adult and appreciative.
Uh-huh.
Extremely appreciative.
Yeah, go ahead, Connie.
I do remember, you know, all the hard parts of it, Brenda. But I also, to me, when I think of Elkinsville, and maybe it's just my rosy glasses looking at them, you know, but it's like a storybook to me, like a Dick and Jane, one page of this, one page of that, and that being my memory of walking to the store, or you know, the cows out in the fields and watching them, you know, work with the hay and all that, and walking to school, those type of things. That's how I remember it, and maybe I choose to remember it that way, but I remember that.
Well, we've already discussed this one-room schoolhouse with the potbelly stove and all that.
Absolutely, and forced starting school with no shoes, you know. I remember that, you know, type of thing. And I remember the side ditches with all the water running down them. And as a matter of fact, I have those side ditch lilies, those big orange lilies of my great-grandmother's that she brought, that my grandmother brought from Elkinsville to Columbus, and then I brought a pot of them here to Arizona, and they grow beautifully here. But I can remember those type of things, wandering along the road and enjoying that.
Uh-huh. Well, Forrest touched on that the water didn't, you know, take everything, and I want to elaborate on that for our listeners. Apparently, there's a cemetery there.
Oh, yeah.
I assume some of your ancestors are buried there.
Oh, yes.
There.
Oh, yeah. In the Duncan Cemetery, too.
Deckards and Lucas's. All
Hensley's,
in the cemetery.
Yeah, and the Hensley's and Parks were, Parker was part of it, too. But, Joanne, I wanted to bring into another thing and get Carol's response to it, too. I remember some of the sweetest parts of Elkinsville was Mom going through in the spring and picking greens. And she knew without a doubt which greens were edible and not, and they were the food was so extremely nutritious, as sparse as living was then, but it was really appreciated. At the same time, women were extremely subservient to.
Of course, that was the era, but maybe even more so. You think down
it
there.
Was even more so because you didn't have a car to go. You didn't have a lot of other things.
Well, Nelson, when we have the reunion, and one of my memories and I didn't know we were going to be going to the reunion a couple of years ago. But one of my memories was this man who did auto repairs and had one of the oil cans with a round oil can with a tip on it, you know, like you see in the old cartoons.
Uh-huh.
And he had a round hat on his head. And I could just tell you everything about that shed or garage that he had there. And I was so pleasantly surprised that when we had the Elkinsville reunion, where they have it every year, is at that man's house.
Well, I'm glad you brought all this up, because I wanted our listeners to know the town does have these reunions, and obviously you guys have gone to them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And also, for more information, Carol even brought in, there's a wonderful book called Elkinsville, Washed Away by Progress. It's got photos in it and stuff. These reunions, they're held in the backyard of, does he live in that general area somewhere, this guy?
Oh, he's been gone for many, many years. But his family has kept that, because it's one of, probably, is it, I don't remember there being other homes there. I'm sure there are. But it's one of the very few, that and the cemetery and the little chapel-type church house that is at the cemetery.
Joe, they've actually built a house now. I was down there last fall with Thelma and Jack Kreider, and they've built a house right around where Grandpa Lucas's house was.
Well,
Grandpa Herman.
Hey, I have to. I have to interject here. We're running out of time. A man that goes so fast. I want to thank the Lucas siblings for coming in and calling in. I want to remind our listeners we have a website now. It's Hoosier History Live, all run together, .info. And next week, our topic and guest will be my friend and media colleague, Dick Wolfsey. We'll be talking about roadside quirks. That's because in addition to being a TV and radio personality, of course, and a humor columnist, Dick Wolfsey is the author of Indiana Curiosities. It's a book that spotlights the offbeat and obscure and just played odd corners of Indiana. So join us next week. Thanks to my guests, Carol and Brenda, who made it up despite the monsoon.
Thank you.
Oh, it's been delightful. We could go on so much longer. And thank you, Connie and Forrest, for having been with us by phone. Thanks for sharing part of your Saturday with us today.
Major support from Barnes & Thornburg, LLP. Additional support from Print Resources. More at our website at HoosierHistoryLive.info.